Savoy is just a firecracker, a lot of pace. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to just add to your attack. That he's a puck hound. He's got that whole mindset naturally ingrained in him. You know, I like watching him come through the neutral zone. He can really drive the play with his speed and back defenders off. He'll kind of go under their hands, through their feet. You know what I mean? He's got a lot of that to his game that's going to be really fun and exciting to watch. He's going to create for his line mates.
Chris Baker of Sabres Prospects. We talked to him about an hour ago. Matthew Savoy could make his Amerks debut in the playoffs tonight. Amerks and Hershey, game two. Rochester is up one game to none after a blowout win in game one. Will they put Savoy in the lineup? He skated in warm-ups in game one.
Compared Savoy to Danny Briere.
A little bit. Said there's some Briere there.
And I've said the same. When watching his highlights, I can't get Briere out of my head.
Okay.
Just mannerisms and the size and the shot.
Let me ask you this.
He just really does remind me of him.
I didn't follow up with him on this, but if I'm looking for Danny Briere light, how far away am I if I have Tyler Ennis?
Say that again.
So like Danny Briere light.
Yeah.
Ennis at times reminded me of Briere.
Okay.
The speed.
Yeah.
The nimble. I mean, Ennis was good. He wasn't as good as Briere, obviously, but he was pretty good.
He was.
Until he got run out of here by Tim Murray.
The biggest in concussions, too, right? Like, a lot of concussions.
Yes, I think Tim Murray wanted him to play while concussed.
The biggest difference for me, Ennis, when I think of Ennis, maybe this isn't a huge difference, like stick handling and playmaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
Savoy has that, but Briere could finish, right? Like, he could stand on the wall, rip one-timers, and score goals. Wrist shots, too. And that is, to me, when I see Savoy, like, Ennis never really had that. Savoy, like, I could see him scoring 30-plus goals in this league.
Right. I mean,
kind of the way Briere did.
Ennis is a 26th pick.
Yeah.
And Savoy is 9th. So, I mean, there's definitely more there. Ennis played out west.
I like it. Like, would you take him being Ennis? Probably not, right? He never got to 50 points.
No, you probably wouldn't.
He was a fun player, though.
He was fun. I like Tyler Ennis. Did he score the Sabres' last game-winning goal in a playoff game?
Overtime game five. That's their last overtime playoff game-winning goal and just their last game-winning goal.
Tyler Ennis.
Yeah.
You want to talk about being a hero? Tyler Ennis is a hero. That's Rick's call on that one.
That's a pretty good call.
Yeah, it is.
Is that a more famous goal if they win that series?
Yes.
Or would they have had to go like on a deep run?
Nah, that's a good question. You can give us a call if you want, 803-0550, on whether or not what would have happened if the Sabres take that spot from the Panthers. And Florida's not in. The Eastern Conference would be different. Question is, what would it look like if Buffalo got in instead of Florida? A lot of the answers are that Boston would be the team that made it through.
And man, all the victory laps about the Tkachuk trade for Florida. That wouldn't be happening, right? Like, they still would have won the trade. Huberto had a horrible season for Calgary. In fact, I think had the biggest drop-off year-to-year in NHL history in terms of points. He went from 115 to 55. There's never been a bigger drop-off. But, man, if they had missed the playoffs a year after winning the President's Trophy, like, they're not getting applauded for that trade the way they are now. I mean, people are seeing them. They're in the finals because of that trade.
It's one of the things about players being clutch and how can they produce in the playoffs. If Bobrovsky's not standing on his head, then Tkachuk doesn't have three playoff winning goals in this round.
Right.
They lose the last round.
Yesterday, Bobrovsky, he's a 991 save percentage at even strength in the series, or at least he did going into last night.
In that series, yeah.
Yeah.
And he was 10 goals saved above expected against the Leafs.
Unreal.
In a five-game series.
Yeah.
Two per game. They should have scored two more goals per game than they did. 803-0550. One other thing Chris Baker said. I didn't follow up on this. I'll get to this, and then we're going to play a McDermott cut and talk a little Bills here. Chris also said, and I think this is I like this mindset. Reinhardt in the final. Eichel could get there tonight. Eichel v. Reinhardt, you know, what do you make of that?
Yep.
He said, you know, whatever. Those guys went through some stuff, and good for them. As people, good for them. They're thriving. The Sabres are fine, but, you know, good for Sam Reinhardt. And if he wins the Cup, good for Sam Reinhardt. And if Jack Eichel, good for him. Good for you, buddy. So I end up kind of feeling like that myself. But anyway.
I don't necessarily feel good for you. Like, eh, it's fine. I don't hate it. But it'll depend. When they're lifting the cup, am I going to be like, all right, good. Maybe there will be a little part of me. Because before Eichel came back, especially before he came back the first time, and the post-game comment and then everything after, the attitude I always took with him was, why is everyone so mad he wanted to leave?
Everybody wanted to leave.
Everybody in their right mind would want to leave. Right? Who wouldn't? There would be something competitively wrong with you if you wanted to be a Buffalo Sabre in that moment. Allmark didn't want to stay.
No.
He had a chance.
Some guys that might have wanted to leave couldn't. You know, you could say, whatever. Kyle Poso is going to speak with the media in 17 minutes after extending a contract. I mean, if he had the opportunity to go somewhere else, he might have wanted to, maybe, maybe not. He's not the kind of guy that might want to uproot his family. He's a veteran. He's made a lot of money.
But maybe, hey, Jeff Skinner was locked into a contract in that moment. Would he have liked to be somewhere else and he just couldn't because he had 5 years left in his contract?
That's what I was going to get to on Poso. At one point, Poso's contract seemed like an anchor and completely untradeable, even if they wanted to.
Right.
So sometimes if you are stuck in a place, if you don't say anything, like, oh, you stuck it out. Well, maybe you were stuck sticking it out.
And that's part of the turnaround, right? Part of the turnaround is, in that moment, when Kevin Adams and the Sabres would talk, like, we only want players that want to be here, good luck with that.
Yeah.
In that moment, who in their right mind, who would want to be a Sabre that, either one, didn't grow up a fan, like Alex Tuch, or two, was locked into a contract situation, whether it's entry-level deal or you have got 6 years left in your contract like Jeff Skinner. Who would want to be there? Nobody.
I mean,
now, not to say that they are, you know, prime destination like the Bills have become in the NFL, but they're sellable now. It's sellable. Like, okay, there are reasons why you would want to be here now. They're up and coming.
Yep.
They've got cap room, so you could take their money and convince, like, Hellebuck. Could Hellebuck want to be a Sabre? Three years ago, you'd say he'd never want to be here.
No, never.
And now, I'm not saying that he necessarily would, because he doesn't want... But what do we know? He doesn't want to go through a rebuild. So
he wouldn't be doing that here.
You wouldn't. Like, you could make a sales pitch of, you will be good. And we put you on this team, especially, will be good.
Yeah, it's not a hard sell now.
Right.
803-0550. Okay, so on to Sean McDermott, who is the Bills' new defensive coordinator, in addition to being the head coach. He's on the Pat McAfee show, and Pat asks him, basically, like, how are you doing this with your new role, the changes for you with this Bills roster? And his answer was this.
It feels really good to be able to be back in the weeds with the defense, with the guys, with the staff, solving problems. You know, when we get out there on the field in the first OTAs and competing a little bit, with our offense, and I stopped by on my way to the defensive team meeting the other morning, and I made sure the offensive guys, you know, kind of poked them a little bit and said, hey, it was after day one, it was one defense, zero for the offense. So that got them going a little bit, and a little friendly talk doesn't hurt.
So what do you make of it?
Why, I guess my question would be, what would the reasons why I'd be worried about that?
The reason you would be worried, and I'm saying you because you are someone that is a little worried that they have a defensive-minded head coach instead of an offensive-minded head coach.
Yeah.
McDermott, he wants his team to win, and however they win is fine. He's been the head coach of this team while they've blown up on offense and become a pass-heavy offense and aggressive on fourth downs and... You know, he's been a part of all that, so he deserves credit for that, too, for coming along with that. That said, if you were looking for, or if I'm trying to guess what makes somebody nervous, they say, well, up until the Kincaid pick, you'd say, he gets in Brandon Bean's ear and says, I need a defensive tackle. He gets in Brandon Bean's ear and says, make sure we get my corner number two. Because he's focused, he's always going to be leaning to one side of the ball over the other. This offseason... I think this offseason really did make a lot of Bills fans feel better about the organization's direction between the offensive line and Kincaid and Osiris Torrance. Like, they poured assets to the offense.
Yep.
And if that did not happen, if this is another draft where they went like corner, linebacker, safety, that comment, I think, hits you differently. I think the Kincaid pick and the offensive moves do push all that out
I think so. I think those are, I mean, the actions of the team in the offseason are we want to improve the offense. And
we need to support Josh.
We need to support Josh. And one thing that I would like to think could be true is McDermott is such a good defensive mind that his attitude on some level would be, go whenever he's just, you know, chatting and like doesn't even have to be like a formal meet about the team or just whenever he's chatting with Brandon Bean, something along the lines of go do all this on offense because I got the defense. I'm good. Edmund's gone fine. I'll figure it out because I'm that good of a defensive coach. And that might be a little egotistical, but if you've proven over your career that you're going to have top defenses, and then I would want to think that a coach in the NFL, any coach, not even just McDermott, would have enough ego to think, yeah, that's fine. I can figure it out. Instead of, well, I'm calling the plays now, so I need to have a star linebacker. I got to have Bobby Wagner. Got to have him. Which, if that had been their approach this offseason, I'd be thinking completely differently. So, is that what... That's the proof I'd like to see this year from this defense is, all right, you've got a hole. Middle linebacker. You've got a big hole on your team right now that you don't know what you're going to have. Can you be a top-level defense anyway when you're not pouring draft picks and money into your defense every single offseason? Can you still be a top defense?
Because
when you have a defensive-minded coach...
You should hope that yeah.
I'd want that to be...
Isn't that Belichick? Isn't that the whole point?
Yeah.
It's Belichick. That's Tomlin.
Yeah.
You've got a level of consistency and...
Almost like the defensive version of Shanahan.
Shanahan is,
I could plug in any quarterback in the world, and this offense is going to run. Can the Bills be middle linebacker or another position? I could plug in any middle linebacker in the world, and this coach is going to figure out a way to make it successful.
If McDermott gets one Super Bowl, not over his career, I just mean as soon as he gets one,
yeah,
doesn't he get vaulted into, you would win a Super Bowl with a defensive coach, vaulted into... That class, I mean, Tomlin was a special teams background, but Belichick has...
I think he was both. Okay. I think Tomlin was both.
And Belichick has a million Super Bowls, but you know what I mean? About these guys are consistently good and can prove they can maintain defensive success and they can win the big one. He gets elevated to a very, very elite tier with one Super Bowl win. He's already got multiple seasons of success defensively to prove that the body of work is stable.
That's right. By the way, Tomlin was all defense. He was defensive coordinator with the Vikings. You're thinking of a Harbaugh.
That's right. Thank you. Right.
But anyways, if he gets one Super Bowl, man, because you know what will be paired with that is the record. And like right now, you can point to his record and say, okay, 63% win percentage. Historically good in the NFL. And the natural follow-up will always be, yeah, well, what about in the playoffs? Where's the Super Bowl? But if he gets that, now, okay, Super Bowl plus... He right now is 20th all time in win percentage from head coaches. 20th all time. I mean, yeah, I think he's an all time great head coach with one more Super Bowl.
Just one, period.
Just one. Just one is what I mean, yeah.
Meanwhile, there's a piece up at USA Today, Greg Cosell and Doug Farrar doing some analysis. I heard you listening to this earlier.
Yeah, he said Cosell made the point that because McDermott learned under, I think, Jim Johnson is the former defensive coordinator.
Yep.
And given what his background was in Carolina, that you might want to expect more blitzing.
Yeah, that McDermott taking over defensive play calls from Frazier, the Bills are about to be a lot more aggressive on defense.
And they were near the bottom of the league in blitz rate last year. He also pointed out...
They have been for a lot of McDermott's career.
Yes. He also pointed out last year that they were at 23%. During the regular season in blitz rate, which was still near the bottom of the league, and then they went down to 14% in the playoffs. So they already weren't blitzing a lot, and then even decreased it even more when the playoffs showed up.
Is that not a testament to the quarterbacks you play? If you blitz Burrow all day, he'll destroy you.
Yes.
This is the thing about blitzing. Everyone loves the idea of blitzes.
Because you're going after them.
The best
right?
quarterbacks,
the mentality of it. Yeah,
the best quarterbacks light you up on the blitz.
Yeah. Allen's passer rating against the blitz in his career is it's like 130 or something.
There are plenty of times where you're like, I would love if this defense blitzes.
Yeah.
The Dolphins have had
success. Dolphins did do that, though.
The Dolphins had success against the Bills by blitzing early and then simulating blitzes. Like, you spend the early parts of the game getting in Allen's head that you're coming, and then you stop coming. So he's reacting like there's a blitz while you're covering, while you're dropping guys into the secondary. That was the first game.
Well,
they blitzed him early. They hit him hard early. He hit touchdowns against them early. Then they backed off, and his clock was still a little bit fast, and the offense was off.
Well, and if that's a quarterback number, like how many quarterbacks this year do we feel like, okay, yeah, go after him, go get him, versus, oh, they'll pick you apart. Yeah. They'll hammer you. Because a couple years ago, remember when they played like no good quarterbacks? That was a year where like, oh, go all out, blitz, attack these guys. This year, Rodgers twice, Tua, and Mahomes and Burrow and all the quarterbacks they played this year.
Don't forget last year in the opener, they blitzed Matthew Stafford zero times.
Yes.
It was one of the third game in NFL history with zero blitzes. I think it's happened three times in the last however many years, and the Bills have two of them. They didn't blitz Mahomes in a matchup here. They didn't blitz Stafford in that opener. Let's go to Sam in Rochester. Good morning, Sam.
Hey, good morning, guys. Overwhelmingly, I feel in favor of Reinhart lifting the cup over Eichel. And I think it has something to do more with being happy for Sam Reinhart than it is that I still have hurt feelings about Eichel. And I just think it's the way he came up. You know, he had to do a little bit of time in Rochester before he got on the team. And now he's playing like a star role in Florida. And every time he won a series this year, it was like I just felt so happy for him. And, you know, I just think that Eichel actually plays a lesser role on Vegas than Sam does for Florida. And I just don't really – it's like I picture Eichel lifting the cup, and I just – man, I just – for some reason, I just can't really feel happy for him. It might not be any logical reason, but it's just hard for me because I just don't think he deserves as much credit for that team's success as Sam would for Florida. So that's what I got.
All right. Thanks, Sam. I would disagree. Eichel's more important to Vegas. He had skated 20 minutes the other night. He's leading them in points. His line's the reason they beat Edmonton.
Yep.
He's been good defensively. He's their number one center. He has other players around him that are good, too. Yeah, but like that line.
He's been their best forward, hasn't he?
That line is their – that's their line.
Yeah.
That has been Marchessault, Eichel, Barbashev. Every night, that line scores. So, I mean, Reinhart – I'm not trying to take anything away from Reinhart. I guess I would just say – careful with Eichel's like role playing. Eichel's driving the Knights.
Yeah. And Reinhardt is not quite driving the Panthers. Kachuk's driving the Panthers. And Bobrovsky.
Playoff scoring leaders right now. Points.
It's probably still Dreisaitl, isn't it?
It is. No, it's Hintz in Dallas.
Okay.
McDavid 20 points, Dreisaitl 18. Eichel has 16 points. That leads Vegas. Mark Stone has 15 points. Ice time per game. Eichel out times Mark Stone on the ice. He's their number one forward in ice time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not telling you that means you have to root for him.
Would fans root for Reinhart because then you're guaranteeing no Conn Smythe for a former Sabre?
Maybe. I mean, Brandon Montour's playing a ton of minutes too.
But, yep.
Is Eichel being the leader that people maybe wanted him to be when he was the captain? Probably not. He doesn't have the pressure of being the captain there. But I've always felt like leadership is in the eye of the beholder. Who's the leader? I don't know. If he leads them in points, that seems like it's a pretty good job.
Yeah. Is Mike Modano? Mike Modano famously was like never wanted to be the captain, never spoke in the locker room, you know, was like kind of a quiet guy. And did people question his leadership or no, just because they won? And the moment they won, that will never get said about him.
Yeah. You know, it's funny too because like I think back to the Sabres 05, 06, 06, 07, Drury got all the credit for being like Captain America, Little League guy, the winner. And he led in that way, and Breer was his way. He despised losing, hated losing.
Yep.
Like if Breer is here for 3 years and they finished dead last three times and he's putting up those points, doesn't he demand out?
Sure. Doesn't he break his stick over the post like Eichel did?
I just saw, who was it? It's David Montgomery. Here's an example. Like,
oh, yeah, I saw this.
David Montgomery, who just left the Bears to sign with the Lions,
Which is also funny that the Lions have become this team.
Right, the Lions are going to change David Montgomery's life.
Yeah.
But here's just a random running back, a guy that you maybe never heard of, don't know. Maybe you do because you got him in fantasy, of course, or you watch the Bears.
Yep.
But the point is just, he flat out said he hated football because they lost so much.
Yep.
Was not fun anymore. And some guys are able to tune it out, get to work. All right, let's go back to it. We're in last place. I don't care. Love the guys in this room. And others, just I can't sleep at night because this losing, it's hurting my life. So there are some Sabres that were bothered by it. You know, you could make a point, and it has been, about guys that are just, like, think about Shane Doan. Shane Doan played his entire career in Arizona, right? Did he move on ever anywhere?
I think he ended there.
He decided not to take a trade because he didn't want to leave Arizona. And wouldn't people have just said, like, wow, this guy is okay with losing? His team stinks. A contender wants him, and he doesn't want to go. But, you know,
it never gets said about him, but maybe it should.
I mean, the Sabres offered him like $9 million that one free agency.
Yeah.
There was a report they were going to give him a ton of money.
Even beyond that, though, like, I remember Pittsburgh every year was trying to get him. Every year. It was, Pittsburgh, they're trying to get Shane Doan. And he played 1,500 games in the Coyotes organization. He played 1,500 games. And they won a playoff series in one of those years. I mean, what's better? The guy that needs out of that, or the guy that, I mean, on some level, yeah, like, settles for, yeah, this is fine, I'm good enough, I'm living in Arizona, I'm making this amount of money, and we're bad every year, I'm right. Good.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's all about framing your own experience. If you talk to a Sabres fan about the Sabres, how many different guys will they say are leaders on the team? 7.
Yeah.
I got Oposo, Dahlin, Tuck, Thompson. Skinner leads in his own way. When we talk to Don Granato about Skinner, he doesn't wear a letter. Granato says,
yep,
the players follow him. They feed off him. Wherever Jeff Skinner goes, they follow.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a leader, right? Not thought of that way. So leadership is a, whatever, fluid term. Some guys are the stereotypical version of it. You know, if you've got, if the Sabres were to win the Stanley Cup, and the guy that raises the Conn Smythe Trophy is not a leader.
Yeah.
Form the
it's
line.
Jack Quinn.
Form the line on who cares right over here.
Yeah.
I'm going to get in line. Who cares about that? Like, nobody. 803-0550. We're on a bunch of stuff today. All over the place.
I got Shane Doan stats open.
We got Velociraptors. We got Shane Doan.
My tabs
David
open.
David Montgomery.
My tabs open right now are NHL betting lines, our contest for today. Shane Doan stats and Velociraptors.
This is going to be a new segment we're going to do. The tab check.
The tab check?
Keep the tabs open throughout the whole show.
Yeah.
And, like, the new Extendo Sports will be a tab check. All right.
Tab check.
Here's what we looked up today. I've got Tina Turner in Switzerland. Velociraptors.
Tina Turner.
Yeah. Taylor Swift performances.
Uh-huh.
All that good stuff.
Jurassic Park IMDb.
Yep. Break time. More of your calls. We'll get right to them if you stick with us to the other side here on WGR.